Good morning. Well, I wonder what you talked about in your little groups as you thought about getting bad news. I wanted us to start by having a little bit of a think about how we respond to bad news or to bad situations. So the trains weren't running this morning between Gordon and Chatswood, and so it took me an extra half an hour to get here, and I was a bit cranky at that. I was annoyed. Sometimes when when something happens in life, we might get annoyed about it. That's probably a bit of a trivial one, though. What about when more serious things happen, like a sickness or someone that you love is diagnosed with an illness, a car accident, perhaps. Maybe your kids are sick. Maybe you've got financial pressures or difficulties at work. The way that we respond to difficulties in life, I think, says something about what we think of God, how we view God, our picture of God, and how he is involved in our lives. Is God aware of what's happening? Does he care? Is he treating us unfairly? And then when real tragedy strikes, sometimes there's a temptation, and sometimes you see it in people, that they turn their backs on God. How could God allow this to happen? How could God exist? How can God be good if he's allowed this to happen? These are some of the questions that the exiles in Babylon must have been thinking, the exiles with Ezekiel, that when they looked at what had happened to them and what was about to happen, they must have been wondering, how has this happened? How is God involved in this? So just a quick recap. I've got a map up here. It's probably really difficult to see, but you might remember that the nation of Israel had been separated into two kingdoms. So there was the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. And Israel had the capital Samaria, and the capital of the southern kingdom was Jerusalem. And it was in Jerusalem, which was where the temple was. But the kings over Israel were terrible. They led the people away from God. And so in judgment, God sent the nation of Assyria against the northern kingdom. And so in 722 BC, the Assyrians come in and they basically wipe out the northern kingdom. But the southern kingdom remains for about another 120 years until the Babylonians come into power. And eventually, God sends Babylon against the southern kingdom. And the Babylonians carry off into exile a whole bunch of the people from Judah. And among them is Daniel, who you probably know. But the problem is that Judah continue to rebel against Babylon. And so the Babylonians come against Judah again, a second time. And they exile a whole bunch more of the people from Judah and take them off to Babylon. And amongst that group of people is Ezekiel, the prophet Ezekiel. And so Ezekiel's carried off into exile. And I've actually got a picture here down. You probably can't see that at all, really. This is a clay tablet from the Babylonian Chronicles, and it describes the rations, the food rations that were to be given to to King Jehoiachin and the exiles with him and Ezekiel while they were in Babylon in exile. But eventually, the Babylonians come in and they destroy the southern kingdom entirely in 587 BC, and eventually all of Judah is carried off into exile. And so the book of Ezekiel, it begins for us in the fifth year of that exile, of Ezekiel's, the second exile. And Ezekiel is speaking to his fellow Israelites in exile, and he has a message from God, a message about why this has happened. Why have these things happened? Why have we been brought out of Jerusalem into exile? And what about those who are still in Jerusalem? What's going to happen to them? Are they better than us? Is that why they've stayed in Jerusalem? And chapters 1 to 24 of Ezekiel in those chapters, the big theme, the big thing we see is Israel's sin and God's judgment on that sin. A judgment is coming, says God. Jerusalem will be judged. And now in Ezekiel 24, the judgment has come. Ezekiel 24, if you like, is the beginning of the end. This is it. The judgment has come. So have a look with me at verse 1 of chapter 24. In the ninth year, in the tenth month, on the tenth day, the word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, record this date, this very date, because the king of Babylon has laid siege to Jerusalem this very day. Mark it on the calendar, says God to Ezekiel. Mark this date, because this is the date when Nebuchadnezzar has laid his siege works against Jerusalem. It's only a matter of time now before Jerusalem falls. And this is the same date that we see in 2 Kings 25. It's the ninth year of the reign of Zedekiah, the last king of Judah. And as we look at Ezekiel 24, we notice that it's split into two sections. We get two images of God's judgment against Jerusalem. And it allows us to understand why this is happening. Why is this happening to Jerusalem, and how are the people to respond to what is happening? And so the first image that we have is of a cooking pot. This is the one that Tom read for us just a moment ago. And so in verses 3 to 5, we get this image of a cooking pot. And it's a happy image. It's a pot with a tasty stew inside it. All the choice pieces of meat are in there. And it's good to be in the pot. You want to be in the stew. And in fact, this is the image that those who are still in Jerusalem use to describe themselves. We're in the stew. We're the choice pieces of meat. Not like you guys who've been carried off into exile. We're in the pot. We're in Jerusalem. And yet, God flips this image on its head in verse 6. For this is what the sovereign Lord says, woe to the city of bloodshed, to the pot now encrusted, whose deposit will not go away. Empty it piece by piece without casting lots for them. You see, the pot is Jerusalem, and the meat in the stew is the people. But notice what God says. I'm going to empty the pot. The meat is coming out of the pot. It's a picture of exile. The Babylonians have come, and they will remove the people from the city and carry them off to Babylon. But why is this going to happen? Have a look again at verse 6. Woe to the city of bloodshed. And again down to verse 7. For the blood she shed is in her midst. She poured it out on the bare rock. She did not pour it on the ground where the dust would cover it. Jerusalem is a city filled with violence. And so God is bringing a violent end to a violent city. God is just in what he is doing. And yet there's another reason that God is bringing this judgment against Jerusalem. I wonder if you noticed it. Again in verse 6, woe to the city of bloodshed, to the pot now encrusted, whose deposit will not go away. Jerusalem is a dirty pot. I wonder if you're like me and you dislike washing up. I'd rather cook 10 meals than to wash up after one meal. But part of the reason for that is often you'll get a pot that's, you've burnt what was in the bottom, or you've cooked it a bit too long, or those oven trays that get that greasy sort of residue that's really hard to clean off. And God is saying that's what Jerusalem is like. They're like a pot encrusted with this deposit, like a corrosion almost. And it cannot be cleaned. Verse 6, he says it's a deposit that will not go away. And have a look down to verse 12. It has frustrated all efforts. Its heavy deposit has not been removed, not even by fire. And what is this deposit? What is the impurity of this pot of Jerusalem? Verse 13, now your impurity is lewdness, because I tried to cleanse you, but you would not be cleansed from your impurity. You will not be clean again until my wrath against you has subsided. It's a picture that the impurity is sexual impurity, but it's an image. It reminds us of earlier in Ezekiel when Israel are described as being like an unfaithful wife, a wife who has turned away from her husband and has chased after other lovers. And God says, Israel, this is what you are like. I'm your God, but you've abandoned me. You've sought after idols. You've chased after other gods. And so this is the reason, this is the crust on the pot. It's Israel's idolatry, and God will not tolerate it. God has tried to clean the pot, verse 13, but they would not be cleansed. And so verse 14, now is the time for judgment. I will not hold back. I will not have pity. I will not relent. God is going to destroy Jerusalem. And the image in verses 9 to 12 is of God stoking the fire with wood and heating up the stew until the water's boiled off and the bones become charred, and then heating it some more until the pot glows red hot, and until eventually the deposit, the dirty deposit on the pot is burnt off. God's judgment is coming against Jerusalem. God is going to burn away their impurity. What about those in exile, those with Ezekiel? Well, when this judgment happens, they are to look on this and to see that God has done it, that God cares about justice, that God cannot tolerate sin, that God has been slow to anger, but that his patience will not last forever. Sin must be removed. Justice must be done. I wonder if your mental picture of God allows for this, of a God who is angry, angry with sin, who cannot tolerate impurity. Sometimes I wonder whether we downplay the seriousness of our sin. We tell that little lie to get out of an embarrassing situation and think nothing of it. We hold a grudge against someone or hateful thoughts against people. We're greedy. We browse online through things that we don't need, and yet we're so slow to share with others. We let our eyes wander onto inappropriate content online, or we linger on that TV channel which we know we shouldn't be watching. Or we join in slandering the boss at work or co-workers. We downplay our sin. And yet we see here that God is angry. God is angry with those in Jerusalem because of their sin, because of their violence, their idolatry. And so Jerusalem is about to be destroyed. That's the first image that we have, this pot. The second image is much more personal, and it's of Ezekiel's wife. Have a look with me at verse 15. The word of the Lord came to me, Son of man, with one blow I'm about to take away from you the delight of your eyes. Yet do not lament or weep or shed any tears. Groan quietly. Do not mourn for the dead. Keep your turban fastened and your sandals on your feet. Do not cover the lower part of your face or eat the customary food of mourners. And so I spoke to the people in the morning, and in the evening my wife died. The next morning I did as I'd been commanded. This is awful. Ezekiel is told that his wife is going to die, and she dies suddenly, and yet he's denied the ability to mourn for her. I can't imagine how I would feel if my wife died suddenly. I'd be inconsolable. And yet Ezekiel is told not to mourn for his wife. Why? Is it that he didn't love her? Is it that she wasn't worth mourning for? Well, no. Verse 16 tells us she was the delight of his eyes. No, this is to be a sign to the exiles who are with Ezekiel in Babylon. Have a look with me at verse 19. Then the people asked me, "Won't you tell us what these things have to do with us?" And so I said to them, "The word of the Lord came to me. Say to the house of Israel, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I'm about to desecrate my sanctuary, the stronghold in which you take pride, the delight of your eyes, the object of your affection. The sons and daughters you left behind will fall by the sword, and you will do as I have done. You will not cover the lower part of your face or eat the customary food of mourners. You will keep your turbans on your heads and your sandals on your feet. You will not mourn or weep, but will waste away because of your sins and groan among yourselves. Ezekiel will be a sign to you. You will do just as he has done. And when this happens, you will know that I am the sovereign Lord. Just as Ezekiel's wife was taken for him, in the same way God says, I'm going to take away the delight of your eyes. I'm going to destroy my sanctuary, the temple. Now, if someone were to come and to destroy the Harbour Bridge, that would be a national tragedy. It would be significant. Or if someone went to Paris and you know, cut off the legs of the Eiffel Tower and toppled it to the ground, that would be a significant thing. Those are significant landmarks. They're iconic. And yet the temple for Jerusalem, for Israel, was more than just a significant landmark. The temple was the pinnacle of God's saving acts for his people. God had redeemed his people out of Egypt and brought them into the land. And the temple was God's presence with his people. A holy God dwelling amongst his people. The temple was their stronghold. God was with them. They were the people, the very people that the God of the universe had chosen as his own. And yet now, the temple is to be destroyed. What does that mean? Has God forgotten his people? Is God no longer with them? No longer protecting them? Has he rejected them completely? It can be difficult for us to appreciate how significant a thing this is. And yet, just as Ezekiel is forbidden to mourn for his wife, so Israel are forbidden to mourn over the temple. We mourn in different ways, don't we, depending on our culture. Often we mourn quietly, we grieve quietly, but in some cultures it's normal to tear your clothes or to beat your chest, to wail out loud. And Ezekiel is denied and the people of Israel are denied that right, that to express that cultural norm of mourning over the temple. And why is this? Why are they not to mourn? Well, it may be that God is saying, you have no tears left. What has happened to you is so terrible, so awful, that you just don't have the strength. You have no more tears left to cry. Or it may be that God is saying to them, before this happens, don't weep about this. Don't come groveling to me and crying to try and change my mind. I will not change my mind. The judgment is coming. This is inevitable. Or more likely, I think perhaps this is saying that this judgment that is coming is deserved. There is no room for sympathy here. This is exactly what you deserve. Do not cry over Jerusalem. Do not cry over the temple. This is deserved. And so chapter 24 ends with this dire prediction of the destruction of Jerusalem and of the temple. And this is the beginning of the end. When we get to chapter 33 of Ezekiel, we see these events completed. In the 12th year of the exile, a fugitive comes from Jerusalem to tell Ezekiel that the city has fallen. And so the siege that began at the beginning of chapter 24 here finally ends with the destruction of Jerusalem. And we see it filled out in 2 Kings 25. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, marches into Jerusalem in 587 BC. He burns the city to the ground. He burns the temple to the ground. He takes the sacred objects out of the temple and he smashes them and he carries them off to Babylon. And he carries off the people with him. This is a tragedy for Israel of epic proportions. They thought that they were secure. Have a look at verse 20. The temple was their stronghold. We've got the temple. God is with us. And yet nothing could have been further from the truth. They'd rejected God and they'd turned to idols. They'd filled the land with idolatry, and God simply would not tolerate that. God will not share his allegiance with another. God is holy. He will not tolerate sin. And so Israel, in putting their hope in the temple, had a false confidence. Now let me ask you, where does your confidence lie? It's tempting to think that, I'm a Christian. I'm right with God. It doesn't matter overly how I behave. I can dabble in sin. It doesn't really matter. I'm protected. Or we might think I'm a regular at church. Or I've been baptized or confirmed. I'm right with God. Is that where your confidence lies? Because that would be a false confidence. Israel's confidence was in the temple, but in reality, they were far from God. You see, we can be in danger of missing the seriousness of our sin. We can have a false confidence, a self-righteousness. Israel thought that they were secure because they had the temple in their midst, but their disobedience had driven them far from God's presence. God was going to destroy the temple. And so chapter 24 is a heavy chapter. In fact, chapters 1 to 24 are heavy. We're hit again and again with the sin of Israel and God's judgment on them. Why? Why are these chapters here? Have a look with me at verse 24. Ezekiel will be assigned to you. You will do just as he has done. When this happens, you will know that I am the sovereign Lord. And again, down to verse 27. So you will be assigned to them, and they will know that I am the Lord. This is a refrain that keeps coming up again and again in these chapters of Ezekiel, that the people might know that I am the Lord. Now imagine for a moment that you're one of the exiles in Babylon. What would you be tempted to think about God? He's not as powerful as we thought he was. How did he let his city get destroyed and his people carried off? How did he let his house, his temple, get burned to the ground? Wasn't he able to protect us? Are the gods of Babylon more powerful than Yahweh? Should we worship Marduk instead? Well, chapters 1 to 24 of Ezekiel speak loudly into that situation. God says, no, I am in control of these events. I have brought them about. I am the sovereign Lord of the whole earth. It is me who has brought the Babylonians against you. This is in judgment for your sin. The judgment is deserved. I've been patient with you, but you will not turn back. The time for patience is over. It is the time for judgment. And so these chapters are written that the exiles might know that Yahweh is God. And so is there any hope? These are heavy chapters. We're confronted with the terrible sin of Israel and the judgment of God. But in many ways, chapter 24 is like the turning point in the book of Ezekiel. As we get to chapter 33, we see the destruction of Jerusalem has finished. And as we look beyond to the rest of the book of Ezekiel, we see hope. There is hope to come. But we're not there yet. And we need to sit and to feel the weight of chapter 24. That sin is serious, that those who turn away from God cannot expect to escape his judgment, no matter how secure they think they are. That God's patience has an end point. That God's justice means he must punish sin. That God's holiness means that he cannot dwell amongst a sinful people. And yet even in chapter 24, there's a note of hope. Just a hint of hope. I wonder if you noticed it in verse 13. Now your impurity is lewdness. Because I tried to cleanse you, but you would not be cleansed from your impurity, you will not be clean again until my wrath against you has subsided. Yes, the time for judgment has come. Yes, now is the time for God's wrath. And yet it is God's wrath that brings about the purification of Jerusalem. It is the fire of God that will burn away the impurity of the pot. And ultimately, this points us forward to the one man who bore the full wrath of God upon himself to cleanse for himself, to cleanse for God, a pure, a holy people. Friends, this is a weighty chapter. I wonder if it scares you. Does the judgment of God scare you? It is scary. But may that fear of God drive us to cling not to our own self-righteousness, but to the cross, to the one who bore the consequences for our sin upon himself. Please would you pray with me. God our Father, thank you for these chapters here in which we see your judgment. Father, grant that we may see clearly the seriousness of our sin, that we may not make the same mistakes that Israel did and seek refuge in our own self-righteousness, in things that will not stand. But Father, help us to cast ourselves again on the mercy of your Son, who bore your wrath on our behalf, that we might be cleansed. Amen.